Hi, everyone, and welcome to Academic Dean, where we connect with passionate college leaders who share their stories and viewpoints of higher education, especially lessons learned along the way. Academic Dean is sponsored by Myers-McRae Executive Search and Consulting. Now, here's your host, Dr. Dave Gercheck.
Hi, everyone. Today, I'd like to welcome Lynn Legrone to our show. Ms. Legrone is the provost at Hawkeye Community College in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Hi, Lynn. So glad to have you on the podcast today.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks for welcoming me aboard. And we actually serve the Cedar Valley, which is Cedar Falls, and then again, Waterloo. So Waterloo is our home base. Oh. And it's a community of about 100,000 people or so. We are a really diverse community in this part of Iowa on the eastern side of the state. So just north of Cedar Rapids, which is our second largest city, and just east of Des Moines, which is the largest city and the capital of Iowa. So we're as close to Chicago as we are to Kansas City.
Oh my goodness.
We are about 3 hours south of Minneapolis and about 5-6 hours west or east of Omaha. So we're kind of right there in the middle. It's a good sweet spot to
Yeah, you got a really nice location where you're at.
Yeah, we do.
Well, can you talk a little bit about your college and why students select your institution?
Sure. So one of the things that I noticed when I got here, and I've only been here since 2020, I came during the pandemic in August of 20, was that just about everywhere I went, and I would run into people at the grocery store or wherever, and I'm always wearing my Hawkeye badge because mainly it's got my key on it, and they'd say, oh, you work at Hawkeye. Oh, my dad went to Hawkeye. My mom went there. I went there. You know, someone in someone's family has gone to Hawkeye because of our location, and, you know, the affordability, the variety of programs, you know, we're very well known. And at the beginning, the college, which started in 1966, was a technical school. And so a lot of our career and technical folks went to college here. And then in the early 90s, the school became more comprehensive. And we were actually the last of the 15 community colleges in the state to become a comprehensive community college offering AA and AAS degrees along with career and technical paths. And so it's easy to see why families would, you know, this would be kind of a family thing. We have had a number of our faculty attended this as their community college and then went on to get their BA or BS degrees or whatever, their four-year baccalaureates at various colleges within the state and outside. So there's a long, like almost a family history of going to school here. 96% of our students are homegrown. And it's just a family. I think there's a family connection for sure.
Oh, neat. Well, what's new on campus?
Gosh, I was almost going to ask you, what's not new on campus? So we're rebuilding, repurposing one of our college buildings into our new health and health sciences building. And we will have state-of-the-art, in fact, one of the biggest simulation labs in the state, 25,000 square feet of simulation. And so within that simulation piece will be an apartment building for students to train, for our EMS students to feel the sense of going into someone's home space and having to remove a patient and get them into treatment or get them to a hospital. Each of our science areas will have a dedicated space, biology, chemistry, micro. We'll also have our OTA will have their own space with occupational therapy equipment within the classroom space and their lab, as well as PTA, respiratory, MLT, our med lab tech, will have the same things. Our medical assisting will have it, obviously our nursing, and we have a working dental clinic. And so people from the community come in and get dental services on campus at either free or really reduced rates. Our dental assisting is also a part of that. So that's just one new piece that we've built. And I'll tell you a little bit more about this a little bit later, but we've just opened an automation and robotics center in our downtown area of Waterloo, which is affiliated with the college as well. And that will work with various community partners, manufacturers all across the area. We'll be sending their people in for training on what we call manufacturing 4.0. So learning how to, to add automation and robotics into your training for your folks, you know. So those are two of the newest pieces. We have an adult learning center that's downtown. It's about 4 years old. It is one space that we invite our students in who maybe English is a second language, so they get training there. It's our high school completion piece. We have a number of graduates who come out of that and then go into either straight into career and technical fields, or sometimes they come out here and decide to go through the AA or AAS programs. So those are some of the new things we're doing. We're planning to do some facelifting on campus. We have a large area that's kind of a courtyard, and we really haven't updated it in a number of years. And so we're embarking on that this year. The building that I'm in, which is Hawkeye Center, which houses our admissions, our business office, the president's office is here, my office is here, records, et cetera. We're going to do a bit of a facelift in here because it's always funny when you have parents come through and say, oh, it was like this when I went to school here. And so we want to, you know, bring it into the modern age and offer just a bit of a new phase, a new look. So a number of things.
Well, I want to do a follow-up question on your apartment simulation. So I assume that's for your EMS students?
That's for EMS students. Although let's say, for instance, our nursing students or our PTA, OTA students could also use the apartment if they want to stage a scenario where a student has to come in, and maybe let's say it's PT, they have to come into someone's home and kind of navigate the home. But you're right. It's essentially for our EMS students. We have an ambulance. We'll have a bay for that ambulance to come into and be able to go right into the apartment to, you know, get a person either out of the bedroom space, the living room space. It's got a kitchen, set up with a dining area where you might have to navigate around the chairs and the table to get somebody out. So, yeah, it's
that's really
fancy.
A great idea. That's a great, most, if you look at EMS, most of the EMS, they have their ambulance, they have their ambulance bays and all that. Nursing usually has their beds and all that, but nobody, you're the first I've heard that thought, no, wait a minute, this is where they actually work. And so that's really a great idea.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. We should be able to, we're doing the finishing touches on the building right now. And we should have students, faculty, everybody good and ready to go spring semester. So we just had a meeting this morning to talk about, okay, what's left? What things do we need to check off? And, let's get that punch list ready so that we can get people in there and folks moved in. Yeah. So we're really excited about that piece.
Neat. Well, how's your college adapting to the changing landscape of higher ed, especially in technology?
Well, that would be one of the ways that we're adapting. The other is that we are really looking at trying to think about how do we incorporate, as everyone is, I'm sure, how do you incorporate AI into your regular day-to-day college work? So I'll back up a bit. So in looking at simulation, being able to, we've had the manufacturers come in and show us, hey, we've got the latest mannequins there. We're going to show you how to use them to the best, in the best ways possible, to offer as many simulated activities as possible. And then when we look at our chemistry and A&P classes, even going back to the pandemic, everyone would say, oh my gosh, you can't teach chemistry online. You can't teach anatomy and physiology online. Well, we all had to do it. And now we're finding ways to perfect it. How do we create that lab scenario for a student at home who's taking the lecture pieces, as an online course, but needs to replicate and do something, their own mini lab there at home. And so we've been working on that pretty extensively. And I think we've done a good job. You mentioned EMS earlier. One of the things we're doing with our EMS program in terms of expanding it is that now they're basically offering almost all of their lecture online, and every piece of clinical is done out in the field. So that allows us to work with other colleges that maybe don't have EMS faculty, that their students can also take our courses online and then go out to a clinical site or a lab site in their community to complete the lab portions of the class. And so we've adapted that way. And I think that's really working. It's a win-win for students because they're not shut out of a program that maybe a local college couldn't offer. And they're not shut out of being able to take classes. You know, so many of our EMS students are currently employed during the day and don't have the time to physically come onto campus and take classes. So this way they get all their lecture in a time frame that works for them, but they're also able to do their clinical pieces, their lab pieces on a schedule that's better suited for their life. And, you know, if it means, hey, I can get my hours in evenings, then so be it. You can do that. So we're really trying to do that. I'm just this week going to be sharing with faculty what we call a faculty fellow position, which will allow two faculty members to incorporate or do some research on AI, whether it's augmented reality, virtual reality, ChatGPT, Bard, any of those, spend next semester working on that and researching what pieces would you like to incorporate into your course. And then next fall, incorporating this piece into your course. And then the following spring, now we want you to share with other faculty. It's kind of a teaching and learning experience. They'll get some release time for doing it. I've already had a number of people approach me and say, hey, I want to do it. So I'm only thinking about having two slots, but if I'm inundated with a number of them who really want to incorporate AI into their daily classes, I'd love to see it because I think, you know, and we all know this, it's not going away.
Right.
So why not use it? Find how to use it.
Yeah. You know, I've talked to a few academic leaders who kind of want to fight, and it's just like, you're in a losing fight because it's happening. So the longer you try to postpone this, it's going to overwhelm your students. Well, how is your institution preparing students for today's workforce?
That's a really good question. And I think every one of us in the community college space, but even in our four-year institutions, is really thinking about how do we do that? How do we best do it? So one of the things that we're doing is partnering up as much as possible with the work, you know, with our workplace providers out there, you know, who's doing what. We've created some stronger pathways on that credit side to get students, you know, aligned with what an employer is looking for. We're doing some things with nursing in particular, which I know as you've talked around the country, everyone's talking about a nursing shortage. We all have it. We've actually are in the middle of working on a program with one of our nursing homes here to get their CNA students where we take the classes out to them. So they have CNAs working in their facility who want to go the LPN route. Some may even want to be earn associate degrees in nursing. We want to be able to take classes out to them where they are and say, okay, we'll do your prereqs out here at your facility. We'll bring an English teacher out here. We'll bring a math teacher. We'll bring science to you so that you can get those prereqs finished or within the program. And then we will put you on the pathway to starting that licensed practical nursing piece. We're doing the same with some of our other career and technical areas. We work a lot with John Deere, which is a big manufacturer out here in our area. And we offer training and skilling up for their workers so that we can do that both on the credit side and non-credit side. John Deere has been a great partner to us in terms of sending their folks to us. And we work the schedule around their work schedule so that they can come out, do the training, and then get back to work. The same thing with Tyson, the meat manufacturer. So we offer English courses to some of their workers, and we do that at our adult learning center. We send our person out to their facility to teach the class wrapped around their workday. So that way they don't have to leave work and try to squeeze a class in when maybe, you know, they've got a full day, they've got, you know, children to worry about. We offer free and very reduced daycare for some of their folks. So if their students have to come out to us In some instances, we've offered some reduced daycare prices for them so that we have a daycare center down at our adult learning center that they can drop their children off if they're taking classes in the evening, and then they can go on, take the class, leave the kids, come back and pick them up and head on home. Because that's sometimes, that's one of the bigger barriers. And we see that across community colleges nationwide, where, you know, you've got working parents who really, you know, sometimes can't afford the kind of daycare they might need, or they don't have the time. They're working during the time that classes generally occur. So we've moved classes into the evenings that better accommodate them. So in terms of working with local businesses, we really, really have a lot of sit downs with them. What do you guys need? What do you need us to help train workers to do? And again, that brings up our Automation and Robotics Center, trying to see, okay, what piece of training is important for your facility? It may not be the same for everybody. And we're really trying to meet those needs. And there are a lot of them. Everyone talks about there's such a shortage of workers. And, you know, we're doing our best, but we're also working with one of our high schools here has a career center within the high school. And it's state of the art. It's amazing. And so we've worked with them to say, okay, if your students are taking this at your institution, what do we need for them to take here? How do we meet those needs? One of the things you may or may not notice, especially if we're one of the first that you've talked to in Iowa, I would say anywhere from 40 to 50% of dual credit students, our colleges invite students to take classes early as high schoolers. And 40 to 50% of some of our enrollment is for dual credit students. And so they get a lot of their credits and earn some of them, their associate's degrees while they're still in high school. That kind of gives them a little bit of an extra boost as they move forward. You know, it helps them get through their four-year institutions a little bit faster. We formed a lot of articulations that way, where we call a 1+1+2. So 1 year at the Waterloo Career Center, 1 year at our institution, 2 years at the four-year institution. And basically it can cut a student's tuition in half if we work it out that way.
Well, you've kind of touched on this, but what other ways is your campus collaborating with local businesses to create mutually beneficial relationships to address regional challenges?
So another way that we've done it is basically looking at, we do a lot of internships and placement out in, you know, different facilities, whether it's a medical facility, depending on, you know, if it's a respiratory student or if it's a, you know, nursing students, et cetera. We partnered that way. But at the same time, our business and community ed has done yeoman's work when it comes to apprenticeships. We've been really trying to offer more and more apprenticeships, you know, in partnership with some of the different manufacturers that are in the area that need, they need workers, and they want to get them skilled up and ready to go as quickly as possible. That's happened quite often. We do a lot of work with within our high school partners in terms of going out and saying, okay, we're going to try to offer an apprenticeship to you if we can get a local, you know, let's say it's a local automotive dealer. If this person or this group needs workers, how do we get our students ready to hit the ground running? We've done that a lot with some of our with those kind of partnerships. We actually had a group of students. We previously had something called the intermediary network. And basically what that was that middle piece between high school and college and work, you know, and it's since been moved over into Iowa Workforce Development. And so what we've done is offered group job shadows, where students come as a group to a certain workspace and watched how work, you know, takes place there. If they have an interest and if the workplace has a space for them, then we're able to fulfill those apprenticeship partnerships, so that then maybe you've got a student who now is able to move in and kind of cut the waiting period. You know, in some spaces that works really well. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they need a little bit more time to learn the ropes before we can actually put them out there. But we're having those conversations, I would say, honestly, almost daily. there are a lot of spaces that need us, but we've worked really well. Our business and community ed folks are, they're out there consistently working on, hey, how do we create more partnerships here? We rank second in the state for contact hours when it comes to non-credit enrollment, which basically Wow. is that piece of offering an apprenticeship or something that makes them eligible to get into work a little bit faster. So education and training, and by far the biggest areas are in health science. And then a little, you know, then probably following that would be, you know, construction areas. We have two different ways of students getting into construction. So one of them is on the credit side with our sustainable construction. And what we've done with the city of Waterloo is bought, we were able to buy houses that had either been abandoned or were in such disrepair that nobody wanted to take them on. We had our students go in and they spent basically their entire academic program is built on, let's rebuild this home, let's make it sustainable so that it's energy efficient and we're using, you know, recycled materials in certain areas, and then putting that house up on the market. So we've sold a couple of them already, and we've bought a lot now of five houses that we're remodeling in an area of the city where those homes had been abandoned. And we'll get those up to speed, ready to sell and put back on the market. It improves the neighborhood. It improves, obviously, someone's way of life. And those have been really successful. Students love those. So that's on the credit side. On the non-credit side, we've also done a project called We Build. And that's been a way for folks to get back into the workforce who have maybe previously had some challenges. You know, maybe they've been incarcerated. Maybe they've not been able to graduate from high school. You know, there have been a number of challenges on that end. And the We Build program puts folks into construction to learn a skill. Maybe it's carpentry, maybe it's maybe they're electricians, plumbing, et cetera. They learn a skill and they're able to work for a company to help rebuild houses out in our community. So we have two pathways for that. And both of them have been highly successful for getting students and actual, you know, workers who are trying to return and get back into the workforce who maybe have had some problems in the past. So both of have been really, really good for us.
Well, how do you see micro-credentials impacting then the future of higher ed?
So a part of that is a bit of the micro-credentialing, right. You know, being able to get you on a path to learn a skill as quickly as possible. We are one of the best places for micro-credentialing in the state. Because we've created so many different pathways. You can earn a certificate from the non-credit side anywhere in a matter of weeks to a few months to maybe for some of them, maybe it's a year. But for the most part, we're talking weeks to months to get someone upskilled and ready to go. On the credit side, we have diplomas, which can be a semester if at most, and then others that go up to a year. So we previously had a welding program that took 2 years for students to go through and get their, you know, earn their credentials. We've now moved that down to a 1 year, pretty intensive program. You come in, you enter, I want to say fall, and you, you know, can finish by the following summer and be right out there ready to work. We're adding some robotic welding as a part of the program because we know that's the next phase. We're trying to add as many new pieces of technology in with the micro-credentialing. So because it's no good to get a micro-credential, but then feel like, oh, the technology has passed me by. I've learned on this, but I don't know this piece of it. So we want to be able to offer as many pathways that way that offers, you know, the student or the potential worker the best opportunities to grow and expand once they do land a position. So yeah, micro-credentialing is still another one of those pieces that we're continually looking at. Okay, how do we revise or revamp this? How do we add in competency-based learning to be a part of it? And so we have, for the last 2 years, we've sent two teams down to the national competency-based education conferences, that especially there's one large one that's national, and they've come back with a ton of ideas about, okay, we're going to try this first in this area, and then we're going to see how it works and how it can be applicable to another space. Welding might be the first space that we use it in. Some of our construction trades might be the next space, but we're working very hard because competency-based learning is can be adapted to just about any area that you're thinking about. And a person can do that at his or her own space. What we have to think about from our end of it, how do we offer and keep this lab open for X amount of weeks? So if you need to come in and do it over three times and I only need to do it twice, how do we leave that so that every time, you know, a person is ready, that they're able to come in and test out and move on to the next phase? So those are the pieces that we're working on right now.
Well, since you mentioned how students sometimes feel that technology has passed them by, how is your college preparing students for jobs that may not even exist yet?
Well, and that's where the AI piece is coming in. And that's where the Automation and Robotics Center are coming in. It's trying to, you know, it's hard to think so far ahead. You know, I think of it, I look at it as being akin to the Jetsons of old. So if anybody knows who the Jetsons are, they'll know what I'm talking about. But, you know, I often equate it to the flying cars. Well, what do we have now? Driverless cars, you know, and how well do we trust those? But it's a matter of researching and trying to see, okay, what pieces can we integrate first? And what are our partners out there in the manufacturing space, in the healthcare space? What are they asking for? What do they want us to do to help them? And that's where we're trying to bring in, you know, state-of-the-art equipment. So the Automation and Robotics Center is all state-of-the-art. Our new Grundy Health Center is all state-of-the-art. And it's one of those ways that we figure, okay, we're going to offer you the ability to learn manufacturing 4.0 or maybe now 5.0. We've exceeded even beyond that. We have a number of conversations going right now, you know, which I won't go into yet, but a number of conversations going now to see, okay, what grants are out there to help us train our trainers and get our trainers up to speed with, here's the next phase of home building. Here's the next phase of welding or plumbing or healthcare in various spaces. So we're working really hard at that. And I think all of us are kind of in the same space. You know, we have the pressure is on to try to find and to be ahead of the game a little bit. Yeah. And I think it's as much as wherever your imagination can take you, that's where we need to be. And we're ready and willing to do it. We're trying to get ourselves in the right space for sure.
Well, you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that you became the provost in 2020. Can you share a little bit about the path that led you to become the provost there at Hawkeye Community College?
It's a really interesting path. So my career, actually, this is my second career. Education is my second career. I started off as a reporter, a print reporter, and a broadcaster. And I did that for about a dozen years, television and radio and print. And I started off in Flint, Michigan. So the home of the UAW and home now, which we think of more, probably more recently, the big water crisis. But that was where I kind of cut my teeth in reporting. And my husband and I moved all across the country. I've lived north, south, east, and west. And in one of those trips, I started to think always, well, I've got to find something else that I want to do. I don't know what it is. And through a series of different moves and different areas of interest, I decided to embark on and going back and getting my master's in fine arts. And so I did that out in New York when we lived in New York. And a little bit of the bug hit me when I did a TA role in one of my classes. And I thought, yeah, I kind of like this teaching thing. It's sort of fun. And I love seeing the spark, you know, in students' eyes when we came upon something. And so my area was English, and I applied for a job just as I was graduating from this program, and as luck would have it, I kind of stumbled into a full-time teaching job, which does not happen very often, probably ever. And I had no real experience actually teaching, but I felt like the president of the college was a small private college. He's the person who interviewed me. He felt like I could do it. And so I did it. And from there, I spent a number of years teaching composition and literature and all of those pieces. I did that in three different states. We moved to Texas at one point. And from Texas, I worked at two of the largest community college systems in the country, Houston Community College, Lone Star Community College, big, huge, beautiful college, you know, environments. And then we moved to Iowa for my husband's job. And I got here in 2013. I was adjuncting. So 10 years ago, I was adjuncting. I was a part-time English instructor and ended up getting a full-time position teaching English at one of the biggest community college in the state, which was out of Des Moines, and moved up and had some leadership positions, had, you know, kind of a hunger and a thirst to learn more. I attended a lot of different conferences and happened to be put into a leadership cohort at the time, where one of the people in the cohort said to me, "Would you be willing to move if something comes your way? I feel like you're ready for the next phase." And I was in a role at this particular college, which was sort of a what they call the district chair, kind of akin to an associate dean or an assistant dean, something like that. It didn't have that title, but it had a lot of those responsibilities. And I said to him, and I thought, well, on a whim, I said, "Oh yeah, sure. I'm willing to move. Hell, we've moved a lot. You know, my family and I, we're rolling stones." And so, but I didn't think anything really would come of it. And a few weeks later, I, you know, was contacted and said, "Well, there's a position at a community college on the other side of the state that I think you'd really be good. I think this would be a good fit for you." And I thought, well, okay, what's the worst that could happen? I apply and I don't get it. It's fine. I'm happy where I am. And this was March 13th of 2020 when that was broached to me. And I thought, well, it's now, you know, this pandemic thing is going to wipe all these things out. I'm not even going to worry about it. And I put my application in at, you know, I would never advise this for anyone. I put it in on the last day, probably at the last hour. When you're not supposed to do that, but I did because I kind of forgotten about it. I was, you know, kind of obsessed with the pandemic at that point and trying to get through my classes. And I didn't expect a lot to happen. I thought, well, there's clearly people who are probably much more qualified than I am, or they've done this role before. I haven't. I know there's a learning curve, of course. And much to my surprise, I made it through the first round of interviews. And I think I made it through those rounds of interviews because I told them point blankly, and I told the president, who I'm grateful that he had the foresight to consider me, I told him, I said, "If you're looking for the traditional person for this role, then I'm not it. I haven't followed the traditional academic path that a lot of other folks have. But if you're looking for someone who's got fresh ideas, and is going to be straightforward and honest with folks and knows what it's like to be a faculty member and why things happen the way they do, then maybe I am your person, if that's what you want." And to my surprise, he interviewed me separately. Well, actually, the consultant called me and said, "So the president wants to meet with you face to face," because all of the interviews, everything I did for this position was all on Zoom. And it was in Zoom in the very early days, and most of us didn't know what we were doing. I had one Zoom interview where my sound wasn't working right. I couldn't hear, so they had to put everything in the chat. I had to answer that way. I had another one where the camera wasn't working and you could hear me. So it was just a mess. And I thought, this clearly is going to knock me out of the park. I'm not going to get this. And the consultant called a few days after all the interviews, all the separate pools. And he said, "Well, the president would like to talk to you face to face." And we had to arrange for a space to meet. And we sat down, we had a meeting. He asked me a few questions. I think he really was just trying to see, okay, is she for real? And I walked out of it. I drove back home and I said to my husband, I said, that was really interesting. I couldn't read him. I didn't know what he thought, mainly because we were wearing masks. And so all I could see were his eyes, and his eyes kind of twinkled a bit, but I couldn't tell for sure what that meant. And the consultant called me that night and I said, well, how did that go? And he goes, oh, I think it went pretty well. And I said, oh, I said, well, who else is he interviewing? Like, what's the next step of the process? And he said, he's not interviewing anybody else. He just wanted to interview you. And then I thought, oh, there's a really good chance I might've gotten this job. And I was really kind of shocked. So it has been probably one of the best decisions I've ever made as a professional, to take on something that I clearly felt, at least at first, this is going to be daunting. It's not going to be a walk in the park. There are a lot of things that I don't know. Within my first year, we had an HLC accreditation review, an assurance review, which I had never done, didn't know even really what all it entailed. And in fact, my IR director that I worked with, she had never done it either, not fully, not by herself. And so between the two of us, we assembled a team and we worked nonstop. And there's a lot that if I knew then what I know now, I would have done differently. But we did a great assurance review. I always felt like, not on my watch. We cannot lose our accreditation on my watch. And so we didn't. We came out with no recommendations. It was really gratifying. And it gave me that sense of confidence that I felt like I needed. But we have been working, really hard throughout, my tenure. I believe in teamwork. I believe in getting the people in the room and asking questions. It doesn't always mean that I'm going to be able to do what they're asking, but at least I want them to know I heard, and that I want to do the best job possible. This has been a wild and fun ride. So I'm really, really enjoying it.
Well, then what lessons have you learned as an academic leader? What would you like to share with new academic leaders just getting ready to start?
I think one of the things I've learned is that you don't need to know every single thing. You won't. You just won't. There are going to be things that come at you that you would have never imagined. So you have to give yourself some grace and some time to think it through. You have to rely on, even when you walk in and you see, oh gosh, this doesn't seem like this is efficient, or this doesn't seem like a smart practice that the school is doing. You can't just tear it down right away. You have to see the rationale behind how and why they got there and why they were doing this this certain way. Why were they asking students to do this? Figure out why. There was a reason why at some point. Not being afraid to ask questions. Always ask before you act. Take the time to get to know the people who are part of your team, but also get to know the people who aren't. Because at some point or another, everyone in your space has to rely on and has to work with people from other parts of the college. And so you need to spend time getting to know them all. And ask other folks around the state. Find a group that with me, we have a academic leadership group that we all get together once a month. And we share questions. We put a question out to everybody. Hey, how do you guys work on overload? How do you do faculty credentialing? How do you do this, that, or the other? There's more than one way to do something. And sometimes, don't knock yourself out trying to reinvent the wheel. Somebody else has found a good way of doing it, and you can adopt it much like you would if you were in the classroom to fit your needs and your college's expectations. And seek out leadership opportunities, attend conferences. Rely on, if you can, build that trusted relationship with your president so that you understand he or she's what their goals are and how well you can align what you're doing with what they need to have done. But more than anything, give yourself a break. You walk in and you feel like you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders sometimes. I can tell you there are days that I have made a list of, here's what I'm going to tackle when I walk in today. And within an hour, none of that's happening because something has exploded over here and I need to stop for a minute and see what it is. And some of the things can be small. For instance, today, for some reason, my keyboard isn't working on my computer. Is it the end of the world? But sometimes it's good. Maybe I don't need to say much. And then other days, be prepared for the people part of this, because academics really is about people. The faculty that you have out there that are working with students, your advisors who are working with students, you who are working with students, stop to think for a minute, how am I impacting my people? How am I supporting the people that I have on the front lines? We had an incredible in-service this past August. And we held it at the local museum. So it was a great space for faculty to get reinvigorated outside of the campus environment, but also in a space that had been remodeled. And they had this, we were their first big event coming in, so they could, see how we liked the space. We had a mental health talk. And basically an interactive presentation from leadership at the University of Iowa. We had a professor there who came in and led this interactive talk with our faculty to help remind them that you're going to see your students struggling, but you're going to be struggling as well. And what do you manage and what do you privilege? What seems to be really important? How do you recognize and act on certain signs and conversations, et cetera? So it's just always a work in progress. And if you can accept that and understand this part of the work I can tackle today, this piece over here might have to wait, and give yourself the grace to do that.
Well, this sounds like a good point to end our show on today. So, Lynn, thanks so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Well, thanks so much for having me and asking me. I'm really excited to see what you do and to hear some of the other podcasts, because I think there's so much we can all learn from each other and to realize you're not on the island by yourself.
Well, that wraps up today's episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening to today's episode, and make sure to visit our website at academicdean.com. Also, if you enjoy our podcast, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Academic Dean is sponsored by Myers-McRae Executive Search and Consulting. Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time.